Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, October 12th, 2014. This is episode 1126. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by BarkBox, a monthly box of high-quality fun, healthy goodies for your dog delivered right to your door. Save 20% when you sign up for a new subscription at BarkBox.com/TechGuy. That's BarkBox.com/TechGuy. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/TechGuy and entering the promo code TechGuy. And by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster, easier, and cheaper. Post your job to 50-plus job boards with one click. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. Anything with a chip in it. You know, anything digital would be a good subject for conversation. I'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. Website. Yes, of course we have a website. I've had a website since 1985. Website is techguylabs.com. Has been updated since then. Tech Guy Lab. No, the web was invented in 89. You couldn't have a website in 85. But I think my first website, which was a crl.com/TildaLaporte was my first website. That was in the mid-90s probably. Hey, speaking of changes, we've got an Apple event coming up Thursday. That's just a few days off. Probably we're thinking iPads, but Apple, these guys, you got to watch and study them for like brilliant marketing. They know what they're doing. The last event invitation was completely innocuous. There was nothing to be gained from reading the invitation, but this time they've loaded it up. Obviously the marketing guys or somebody got a little creative, and they thought, oh, let's mess with these guys. Let's create a new invitation that gets everybody all hot and bothered. And, you know, it's brilliant marketing because really what goes on is that they get me and everybody else talking about them prior to the event and speculating and all that stuff. So not that I got one of these. I have to look at my friends and see what they got. But the event invitation has a, you know, stylized Apple logo. Sometimes people look at these and say, try to read into, oh, it's a rainbow color, but it's giant, or I don't know. Yeah, okay, if you want to say giant, that there's something to be said there. It is, it's big, and you know, it's so big that you it's cut off. You don't see the whole Apple logo, just a bit of the leaf and a bit of the top. Oh, you want to read into it? All right. There have been rumors that there will be a large 12.9-inch iPad. That's as big as a laptop. So maybe that's what that big fruit means. I don't know. But there is some text on here that says something. It's been way too long. It's been way too long. Well, now, wait a minute. They announced new iPads a year ago, so that's not it. They're right on schedule for the iPads, and it's certainly not going to be an iPhone. It's been way too long is obviously implies they're going to update something they already have. So we're not talking about something new. We're talking about something they've had for a while that they're going to, in some way, make a big splash with. What could that be? By the way, see, Apple's, they've already won. Because we're talking about it. I'll tell you what I think. We'll find out on Thursday. I think it's a new Apple TV. And Apple TV, it's been almost 2 years since they've updated it. Still a great device. I use it all the time. They've updated the software, but they haven't updated the hardware. And Here's my thinking on this, that one of the things Apple has said they're going to do but hasn't really taken advantage of yet is something called HomeKit, the idea that they want your Apple devices to be the hub for home automation. And what better device to do that with than an Apple TV? It's already connected to the internet, right? It's already on the Wi-Fi. It's big enough to hold the circuitry it would need to hold to be a smart home hub. That's what I think. Some people say, oh, the Mac Mini hasn't been updated. Who cares? No, it's not the Mac Mini. Apple's not going to make a splash updating the Mac Mini. So here's what I think. I think Thursday we'll see new iPads. Yes, indeed. Nothing to jump up and down about. In fact, I bet they don't spend a lot of time on them because the iPad's pretty much all you can do is like make it a little, you know, faster. You can't really make it much thinner. The Air is pretty thin. Colors? Who cares, right? What could you do to the iPad? You kind of have this perfect device already. I think the only thing really they could do and probably will do is a Touch ID, the fingerprint reader, which is on the phone. And there's a good reason to do that. And this is the other thing I think Apple will talk about is Apple Pay. So Apple's timing's really good on this. No accident. At the end of the year next year, all the merchants will have to buy, before then, will have to buy new card readers. Why? Because the federal government has mandated that all credit cards after December 2015 will have to be chip and pin. This is what they use in every other country but the U.S. In the U.S., we have signature cards. They scan the card or they run it through the chick thing, get the imprint of the card number, and then you sign it. That's how you authenticate it. And it's a terrible system. It's easily defrauded. The signature is meaningless. Right? That's why the bad guys steal Americans' credit card numbers. All they need is the number and that little, you know, that little card, little three-digit or four-digit number on the back of the card, and they can use it. They don't need a signature. There's no signature, really. So chip and pin cards have a microchip in the card and an associated pin number, and that's a little more secure, I guess. At least they use it in the rest of the world, chip and pin. And we are going to get it soon. And along with that change, the law also said that the party in the transaction that has the lowest tech solution is the one who pays if there's fraud. Basically saying, obviously the banking industry wrote this, basically saying, hey, merchant, if you don't have chip and pin hardware and don't use chip and pin and you get defrauded, guess who pays? Not me, not the bank, you, merchant, you pay. So all the merchants are actually now out in the market, and the big ones especially, Walmart and Kmart and CVS, are all in the market for new payment systems, touch payment systems, new credit card payment systems. And as long as they're going to buy one that's compatible with Apple Pay. It's not that most customers will have iPhones, but half will. And those people will be able to just tap their iPhone right on the touch and pay thing, put their finger on the fingerprint reader, and now we're talking very secure. The fingerprint reader is excellent. They're not exchanging a credit card number with the merchant. The merchant never gets any information about you, so it's great for the user. So we're going to start seeing that soon, like October 18th. Apple Pay is coming to Walgreens. I confuse the two. The Walls. Walgreens. Walmart said we're not going to do Apple Pay. We've already chosen our systems and it doesn't include Apple Pay, which I think is kind of interesting. But Walgreens says, or according to a leaked memo, says October 18th, 2 days after the Apple event, we're going to launch Apple Pay. So I think what you're going to see over the next 6 months is a lot of the merchants you use will... They'll still take cash. They'll have to still take a signature credit card, but they'll also offer you the ability to tap your phone on a little doohickey, use your fingerprint reader to authenticate it. I think that's going to be a big change. It's the beginning of a cashless society, I think. We're see that everywhere. And by the way, this doesn't disadvantage anybody who chose Android, as I have. I'm an Android fan, because we've had NFC chips in our phone for a long time. We just don't have fingerprint readers. Well, actually, some do. Galaxy S5 does, but for the most part. But if you don't have a fingerprint reader, you just enter a four-digit PIN, authenticating that transaction. And by the way, when a merchant puts in a new touch-to-pay system, it's going to support all of the above. So get ready. In the next few months, you're going to start seeing these. Don't feel like you have to run out and get an iPhone, although if you want the most secure solution, I'm sure Apple will say, hey, it's an iPhone. Things are about to change. It's kind of exciting. So this is what we'll watch with interest on Thursday, 10 a.m. It's a smaller event than Apple usually has. It's in their little Apple theater there. I think it's only 350 people in that. So that's why they didn't invite me, I'm sure. Just, you know, there was no room. They'd have loved to have me there. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Your calls next. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Chip and PIN, signature and PIN, complicated stuff. Not sure exactly what the law says, but I've been trying to find it just so I can give you the right time frame. Somebody in the chat room said July. I heard end of the year. I don't know what it all means. Just the fact that we're going to try to do something more secure seems a good idea after all of these breaches. The most recent, 75 million people had their emails, their addresses, their names revealed to hackers by JP Morgan Chase credit card company. Now, they did. The good news is they didn't get the credit card information. But they got your email. Not that they didn't have it anyway. Everybody's got, you know, spammers have everything. Still, it's kind of a fraud, identity theft. What do you call them? Identity thieves' dream come true. 75 million. Wow. According to the Wall Street Journal, October 2015 is the end of the swipe and sign credit card. The end. I don't know if is that fair? Can't you still use it? What are you going to do if you don't, you know, you like Rip Van Winkle, you've been asleep for a few years. I can't use my credit card? Even in Europe where they are chip and PIN, they don't like it. You could see a heavy sigh from the merchant when you say, well, I'm from the States. We don't have chip and PIN. Okay, sir. We'll use your antiquated system. Sign here. Half the world's credit card fraud happens in the U.S. Why? Because we don't have these more secure systems. MasterCard and Visa have voluntarily set October 2015 as the deadline for the switch. Anyway, it's all happening in the next year. Joshua, our first caller of the day, Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Joshua.
Hi, Leo. Great to talk to you. How are you doing today?
Thanks for calling. Good to talk to you. I'm doing great.
Thank you. I own and operate gaming servers, and I noticed you enjoy a bit of gaming yourself, so I wanted your opinion. Where do you think the future of online gaming lies, and where would you suggest owners and developers invest their time and resources to prepare for the future?
What servers do you run right now?
I run Minecraft servers at the moment.
I think you're safe. The future is bright, unless it's possible. You know, Microsoft has purchased Minecraft. That takes a while, maybe a year before that'll become, you know, a reality. At that point, I wouldn't be surprised if Microsoft moved all the Minecraft servers to Azure or something like that. But, you know, there is a culture in Minecraft, a very vigorous and vital culture of personal servers, having your own Minecraft space. I know many kids who've set up their own servers. Our kid keeps saying, when are we setting up our Minecraft server? We have one in our basement. So there is, even if Microsoft says, well, you know, we want to run these servers from Azure, I think, which is their own, you know, cloud architecture, I think it's likely that you'll still be able to run third-party servers. So Minecraft is pretty safe. I feel like Minecraft is on a great trajectory. And even the acquisition by Microsoft won't hurt it. In fact, it may well help it and bring it even more mainstream. You know, one of the reasons people run servers, and you know this, but I'm telling the rest of the audience, one of the reason people run servers is so that you can do online gaming, the idea that you could play against other real people. When gaming first began in the dim, dark dinosaur ages of the 80s, you were playing against a machine. But machines really aren't as savvy, aren't as tricky as humans when it comes to these kinds of games. So it didn't take very long. I think the beginning of online gaming was probably let's see, did Doom, I think Doom eventually got an online component. Quake certainly had an online component. It was really fun. It was kind of a revelation to start playing against other people in these same dungeons that you were playing against computers in. Suddenly, it got challenging and tough. And there were strategies, and it was exciting. Of course, another thing emerged, which is the ability to, with the microphone and headphones, and hobbyists at first did it themselves, and games eventually added this capability to talk to the other guy, whether to talk to your opponent to taunt him or talk to your teammates, even more interesting, to fight them. And I think you look at the biggest online gaming phenomenon right now, besides Minecraft, is League of Legends. In fact, last night was the semifinals for the yearly League of Legends tournament, which has a $1 million prize for first place, which millions of people watch. If you're an adult, you may not be, or at least over the age of 25, you may not be familiar with this phenomenon, but it is bigger, in some cases, bigger than the NFL. It's huge. Not as big as the Super Bowl, but almost. And so this is exciting, and I think that this, what's interesting about League of Legends is it isn't, and you know this, of course, too, don't you, Joshua, but it isn't, it's not a first-person shooter. That's what we've been used to. That's what Doom was and Quake was and most, and Call of Duty is, and Team Fortress. Most of these online games are first-person shooters, but I love it that Minecraft, which is primarily a building game and only secondarily a shooting game, and League of Legends, which is primarily a team strategy game, are becoming the most popular online games of all. This shows that there is some intelligence still in the gamer community, that there's some desire for more than just blowing up everything you see, because most of those games, that's what it is. You know, shoot at everything.
Definitely.
You can. Yeah.
I can tell you, our entire staff team is incredibly excited about the future of those.
I think so. What's the name of your company?
VauzMC. You can find us at Vauz, VauzMC.net.
And so do you run servers for people, or do you run your own servers that people join? How does that work?
Correct. We host it, and we provide a safe place for players and people from all over the world to come and connect, and they can practice their different skills, and awesome.
Yeah. Minecraft is really great, and I think a lot of parents look at their 10-year-olds and go, why is he playing Minecraft all the time? Or she, by the way. A lot of girls love Minecraft. It's like Lego. It's just a digital kind of Lego. It's a building environment. And there's a lot more to it than just that. But it's a lot of fun. So I don't know what the future holds. I hope it's more than just shoot as many people as you can in as short a time as possible. I see the game developers, people like Bungie, which did Halo, which is one of the very, very successful online games, early online games. Their latest Destiny is trying something more, perhaps not successfully, but it's trying something more than just a first-person shooter. I think that the game companies understand that they need to change things up to grow. On the other hand, games are so expensive, hundreds of millions of dollars to develop, they don't have the guts in many cases to take chances. It's the indie game companies. You know, Minecraft was really one guy. It's grown beyond that, but it was if Notch had gone to Electronic Arts and said, "Yeah, I want to do a building game. It will all be 8-bit, and everything will be chunky," they'd have said, "Yeah, well, yeah, whatever." They wouldn't have given them the time of day. So the independent developers are coming up with some very interesting stuff. I think the future is bright, and online gaming is it because it's social. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, where's Ozzy? I want to give him a treat. It's Bark Box time. You know, I've got video of Ozzy. I don't need no Ozzy. I got video of Ozzy and his Bark Box. Let me see if I can show you this. Bark Box is a doggy treat by mail that is so awesome. Ozzy loves his Bark Box. Every month, a box of treats for... You see, he's going crazy. That was his first box. High quality, fun, healthy treats, toys, and goodies. So there's usually 4 to 6 awesome full size products in there. Not like a sampler. That extra full bag, for instance, of those delicious duck burger jerky things. He loves those. But it's different every month. Innovative toys and gadgets, all natural, healthy treats. products you won't find in the typical big box pet store. Oh, he's so happy. All the treats are sourced from the U.S. and Canada, by the way. You can feel confident about that. Chews are made in the U.S., Canada, South America, Australia, and New Zealand, not China. Products do not include rawhide or anything processed with formaldehyde, and whenever possible, organic. No glycerin, wheat, gluten, soy, or corn or filler. So we love our little boy, our little doggy. We love Ozzy, and we don't want to give him anything that's bad for him. But we also want him to be happy, and he loves his BarkBox. If you go to BarkBox.com/techguy, select Get Started, select the size of the dog. We got the Ozzy, the little dog treats, and choose between four different subscription plans. So this is what he was eating, jerky burgers made with duck. He doesn't like ducks. He's happy to eat those. Smokehouse strips. This is bacon for dogs, but you'd also get, look, there's the little Barkley pennant. He loves to crunch that up. The squeaky, okay, if you have a dog, cover his ears. The little, and these are just for his size. Little chew toy, crunchy rabbit chews. Ozzy loves them. Your dog will too. Try it. 20% off your new subscription. BarkBox.com/tech guy. You know what? Ozzy likes the mailman all of a sudden. Is he bringing my BarkBox? What's he got there? Is that a BarkBox? BarkBox.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bryant, next in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
Feeling pretty good so far. I'm just talking about the Giants and the Cardinals. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Cardinals have been doing pretty good this last year.
Oh, it's going to, you know, it's, this is going to be a, this, it is a great rivalry. It's back and forth, back and forth. I love it. So what can I do for you?
I've been having this problem with a browser jacker called bitable.com. I was downloading a defragger for my computer. My computer was like acting a little crazy.
Yeah.
And this was jumped along with it. And every time I opened up my Chrome, it would go directly to their website. So I ended up deleting Chrome completely and reinstalling it. They kind of got rid of the Chrome. But I noticed that it was actually in Explorer also. So it's still in my system somewhere.
Yeah.
I can't find it.
That's malware. I mean, they may skirt it by saying, well, no, it's just advertising, and you said yes. This is always the risk when you download these days. If you're not downloading the program from the, even if you are, frankly, from the person that wrote the program, but if you're getting it from CNET's download.com, if you're getting it, if you get Java from Oracle, they always have a little, you know, pop-up that says, oh, by the way, you'd love to have this thing. And by default, it's checked. And if you're not paying attention, just okay, you're going to get this stuff installed. Now, they say, well, we're not a virus. We asked him. He said okay. I'm not familiar with this. How do you spell it?
B-I-T-A-B-L-E.
Bittable. Yeah, what could be wrong with that? It's a cute little, nice little name, Bittable. What could possibly be wrong with that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I see a Bittable removal guide. So it is not technically malware because probably at some point they asked your permission. It's hard to get rid of because, they don't want you to get rid of it. It comes with software from download.com and Softonic. These are both common download places that I strongly recommend against. I bet you, was it one of those two that you got your defragger?
I think it was maybe download.com.
Yeah. You know, download.com is owned by CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. A reputable, I would think, business. The Tiffany Network, Edward R. Murrow's home. CBS, we may even be on some CBS stations for all I know. CBS, get these guys in line. People trust download.com. It's a CNET product, but CNET was purchased by CBS Interactive some time ago. And I think CBS is probably just turning the other way. They may not even be technical enough to know they're doing this. It's not good. So one of the things that keeps these guys from being labeled malware, besides the fact that they asked you, is they have to have an uninstaller in programs and features. So try going to your programs and features and looking for Bittable search. Have you done that?
Yeah, I tried searching it and nothing came up on the system at all.
Don't search for it. Go to program, you know, the programs and features control panel.
Okay.
And in the list of the various programs, there'll be a program called Biddable. And once you find that, click on it and press uninstall.
Okay.
If it's not malware, it should be completely uninstalled by that.
Yeah.
By the way, while you're in there, look for other stuff that you didn't install. You know, and usually they have kind of a name. You know, that implies, you know, better search is one. Conduit is very popular. Conduit. Now, you also have the reason that this is in there is that they've changed the shortcuts so that instead of when you click on the Chrome, shortcut, instead of linking directly to Chrome, it links to Chrome with Biddable.com as the launch page. That's an easy thing for them to do, and an easy thing for you to fix. So look, right-click on your extensions for Chrome and Internet Explorer and whatever browsers you use. Select Properties and look at the launch link. It's in the Shortcut tab. And remove anything that comes after Chrome.exe or iExplore.exe. The thing that you'll see there is Biddable.com. That's how they get that as your start page. All of this is okay because they asked you. And, of course, you didn't know what you were, you know, you may not even have noticed it. They do it so quickly. It's really shameful. It's shameful. And download.com, knock it off. CBS, would you please get this, your rabid dog in check? I've complained about this for months. And the problem is people search for a program. And this is the behavior you want to be very careful about. You search for, you know, the name of a defragger, let's say, or you even just search for defragger. And instead of having the company that made the defragger, the top search result is often download.com or Softonic. Don't go there because those companies want to put junk on your system. It's how they pay for download.com. And that's probably why CBS allows it. Download.com is a free service. You're using their bandwidth to download files. So they feel, well, we got to make some money on this guy, so let's install Biddable on here. And other stuff, by the way, that's probably not the only thing they installed. But they don't, you know, it's not illegal. It's not a malware because they ask you and there's an uninstaller. But it tricks you. And I don't think big companies like CBS should be tricking their customers. And I also think that if you go to the original author of the software and get the download there, you're going to get the most recent version. You're less likely to get wrappers. You notice when you go to download.com, they say, well, download our special downloader. Well, what does their downloader do? Installs crap on your system. That's what your special downloader does. Not illegal. Probably not even unethical if you look at the letter of it. But I think it's wrong. So, Brian, you should be able to remove it easily. I'm glad you called because I think you're not alone. This is a very common thing. And most people just go, that's annoying, but let me just go on with my life. But every time that Biddable.com page loads, they make money. It's an ad. They've basically stuck ads into your system. And don't think it's not the Tiffany Network CBS. It's the same CBS. It is the same CBS. CBS Interactive is the same company. They own CNET. CNET owns download.com. There's no skating on that. Cassie in Crystal River, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Cassie.
Yes, hey, Leo. Wonderful to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, too. Welcome.
I have a stupid question.
Good. There are no stupid questions. I like them, and I guarantee you a lot of the people listening will go, thank goodness Cassie asked that.
Okay. I remember... back when the magnetic things came out on the cash registers, you couldn't put a credit card on it because it would erase it or whatever. Basically, my question is, I want to be able to just carry my cell phone or my tablet or just whatever and have my credit card or hotel room key with me. Is it safe to put a credit card, a hotel room key that has the magnetic strip right next to my smartphone?
Well, that's a good question. Is there a magnet? Will your credit card key or your credit card get demagnetized by your smartphone?
Correct. because I know you can't put it like on speakers because that's a
right.
magnet.
There's magnets in there. There are small magnets in the cell phone for the buzzing, the vibration, and for the speakers. But I don't think there's enough juice. I've never had a cell phone recently, anyway, demagnetize a credit card. Fortunately, we're getting away from magnetic strips. Terrible technology. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think you're all right. 8888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. Shell is on the line from Martinez, California, our next caller. Hi, Shell.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing? Congratulations on your son's wedding.
It's not my son.
Well, not yours.
No, it's my friend's son, and it was such a beautiful wedding. No, it wasn't my son. Gosh, no, he's only 20. If he gets married now, I'm gonna yell at him.
Say, yeah, that's too early.
Too early. Yeah, I got my first wedding was at 25. I shouldn't say anything. What can I do for my? By the way, first wedding should tell you something. What can I do for you?
I have some. We have something really, really exciting. A gift that we want to try to get to developing nations. It's a prosthetic hand. We've gotten. I help out with a nonprofit organization called the LN-4.org is the website, and we are trying to find. We have plenty of hands. We have lots of financial support. The issue is finding people who are missing a hand from a landmine, to domestic abuse, to civil war, all kinds of different things that happen, especially with children. And the hands are life-saving. A very simple kind of hand, but it's just life-changing kind of
We're
trying
wonderful.
To figure out how to find people who want them.
Well, I don't think a Google search is going to work.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm the right guy to ask. To be honest with you, you've teamed up with an NGO, so presumably they're in country. Beats me, but what a great idea! You know, I just saw a incredible article. I'm going to see if was it Wired about a young man who I think he was 3 or 4. He was older than that because he was 17. He was a avid mountain climber. And got frostbite and lost both his legs from the below the knee, and was so dissatisfied with the quality of the prosthetics that he was able to get at that time. This is maybe 20 years ago, that he created a prosthetics firm. And you've probably seen his prosthetics; they're bladed. They're not your traditional. You're not trying to look like a leg with a shoe at the end of it. And this guy has done some amazing stuff. So prosthetics have made a huge leap. And I think the first, certainly some of it is because we now have micro electronics that are able to sense nerve impulses and so can really attempt to duplicate the functionality of an actual limb. But also the willingness to say, you know, it doesn't have to look like a limb. It in fact, in some ways, it's more functional. Look at Pastorius's blades. I mean, it's more functional. So I wish you luck. I'm not sure. I mean, I think you need to contact the agency that's in country. If it's in the U.S., of course, the VA. But it's in other countries, then since you already are working with an NGO, go to them and say, hey, help us find people who need our product. It's a great idea. Dan in Calgary, Canada. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, hi, Leo. It's a great pleasure talking to you. I have a question regarding recovering partition from external hard drive.
Okay.
I have a Western Digital 1 terabyte that I basically divided in 2 partitions, just to be easier to handle. And some time ago, I noticed that one of them actually is kind of hard to be recognized in Windows Explorer and stuff, but I didn't pay too much attention to it, because it was mostly that I was doing on the first one. And then basically I decided weeks later to go and get a spin right and fix that. So I ran the spin right. I actually took the SATA drive out of the enclosure and connect it directly to the motherboard. So I ran the spin ride, but then basically I couldn't read anything after that. So no partition could
be. So you have to understand, in order to do drive recovery, you have to understand what's happened to the drive. First of all, and I'm going to do a carbonite ad in a minute, get a backup. Because then you don't have to worry. But obviously, people forget to back up or they don't back up. And then that drive dies. And then, oh boy. But drives can die in a lot of ways. A lot of ways. There could be physical failure or soft failure. It could be sectors have died. That's often very common. SpinRite is good for that, but will not fix a lot of the kinds of problems you have. And this is what's really critical if you're trying to do drive recovery. And this is why I say let the experts do it unless you know what you're doing. You can, running a recovery program, damage the drive further. So you have to kind of be savvy about what you're doing before you do it. Otherwise, you might make things worse, not better. If the, you know, drive failure can mean the circuit board on the drive failed, that's an easy thing. You just replace it. You have to replace it with the identical surface circuit board. It could be that there's some software error. Maybe the computer, you also have to kind of think about what might have happened to cause this. Is it wear? Are you hearing rattling? Are the bearings failing? Physical failure is something you generally can't fix yourself. You need to go to somebody and spend a lot of money. That's why you're going to have a backup. Drive savers, for instance, they can actually have bunny guys in bunny suits and clean rooms that can, and all the parts, and they can disassemble the drive, replace a part, reassemble it. You can only do that in a clean room. And if you really know what you're doing, and if you have the exact right part, and they keep them all in stock, and then they can put it back together again. If it's a scrape across the surface of the drive, that's a little harder. A lot of times, most times, drive failure is a soft failure. The partitioning failed, or you accidentally overwrote the file allocation table. There's all sorts of things. But there's too many for there to be one thing like SpinRite that will fix it. What SpinRite's single sole purpose is to go, and this is a friend of mine, Steve Gibson's program, it's about $90, grc.com, is it goes through the drive sector by sector and tries to read sectors that are not normally readable. Your operating system, Windows or Mac or whatever, will give up reasonably. You don't want to sit and wait for your computer to try to read a file for hours. So after a few tries, it goes, I can't read this, and it fails out. SpinRite doesn't give up. And generally, if you read it enough time, 100, 1,000, 5,000, if you read it enough times, eventually you'll get some data off of that. Then SpinRite says, okay, well, let's not use that sector of the drive anymore, moves the data to a good sector, and moves on. By running SpinRite, it's pretty much what CheckDisk was supposed to do, but doesn't. By running SpinRite in a drive, if that's what's wrong with it, you've got some failed sectors, you can often recover a drive. But that is only one of many ways drives can fail. So it's not a panacea. It is for a specific kind of failure. There are programs that will recover partitions. SpinRite doesn't do that because it doesn't know about file formats. There's all sorts of ways, you know, unerasing files and so forth. 8888-ASK-LEO. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater. Coming up at 1:30, our own digital photography guru, Chris Marquardt, will join us with a new assignment and some digital myth-busting. Phone number 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, Skype us. Our website, techguylabs.com, will always have all of the information about stuff we talk about. So if you're, you know, listening in the car, don't worry. You don't have to write it down. Just one thing to remember, techguylabs.com. Show notes are there, but also audio and video after the fact, and a chance for you to comment. So if you're screaming at the radio, Leo, no, don't tell him that, that's okay. That's good. We have a place for you to vent and to help the world. Just comment at techguylabs.com. You can also vote comments up and down, and it's always free. There's no subscription. We don't ask for your email or anything like that. And that way, between all of us, you and me and everybody else listening, we can maybe make a site that has some great information there. TechGuyLabs.com. Now let's get to Jeff, Woodland Hills, California. Hi, Jeff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How's it going today?
Oh, it's going great. How are you?
Oh, just fine. Thanks. And I'll do the disclaimer for you. DSL Extreme, of course, is a sponsor of yours. I've used them since 2008. I just changed this week from DSL service to the new TrueStream broadband.
Oh, you know, I haven't used that. Let me know how you like it. This is, it's still, I think it's still DSL. It's just higher speed. I'm not sure how they're doing it. Is it fiber?
They got rid of my wire from the telephone pole and put a brand new wire in from the pole to the house and a new mid and then a new wire to the jack.
Okay. Yeah, I have to ask them, talk to them about what technologies they're using. They say up to 75 megabits, which is pretty, must be fiber.
Yeah, I signed up for 12 and I'm getting 15 and a half.
Oh, doesn't that feel good?
That's great.
That's great.
Anyway, here's my question, Leo. They give me the U-verse modem, the Pace 5031NV modem. That's the modem they give me. But it's located right next to and is actually touching my Airport Extreme. So first I was wondering, is that okay or is there a...
Well, I wouldn't touch.
It's actually touching it.
It's
okay.
I mean, if you can separate them by a millimeter, that'd be better. I mean, they are plastic cases. It's not like they're conductive. But it just always makes me nervous if electronic gear is touching. So, separate a little bit. Put a little air gap in there, and that's not going to...
A little air gap.
Yeah, a little air gap is always good.
So that was the first question.
Yeah.
The other thing is they're both set for Wi-Fi, and I'm worried about interference. You see,
I have a you should disable... You should only have one Wi-Fi transmitter in there. And most of these modems, like the... I'm pretty sure you can do this with the Pace. You get in there and go in the settings. Did they give you access to the settings?
Yes, I have access. Yeah. And I can shut it off.
Shut off Wi-Fi.
That was my question.
Yeah, shut it off. Just really, ideally, you would use it as a modem only and let the airport do the DHCP, the routing, the network address translation, and the Wi-Fi. So just if you could shut off whatever capabilities of that of the DSL Extreme modem you can turn off, I would. If you can't, then you're going to have to put the airport into something called bridge mode. And tell it, I don't want you to do any routing. Just be a Wi-Fi transmitter.
That's what I did. You see, I have a large property, so I have the Extreme, and then I have two expresses, like
that's
a relay.
That's what I do, too. That's a good way to do it, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so I'm doing that. So I'll shut off the Wi-Fi on the Pace modem from the new one and leave the airport alone. But what about the different channels? Now, you say if I shut off the Wi-Fi, then it doesn't matter what channel I use. I was worried about the two channels interfering with each other. And also, I wanted to know, how does the automatic setting work? It seems to only give me channels 1, 6, or 11. Is that by default, or is it actually reading what channels are available and then going to the proper channel on automatic? Or should I manually set the channel?
Let it do its thing. Usually that's fine. There really are only three channels. We think we all talk about 11 channels.
Right.
But really, because each center channel uses two side channels, there really is, there it's 1, 6, and that's what you got, 1, 6, and 11. And those are the only sensible choices. Anything else isn't really helping you. Because, in fact, if you use a Wi-Fi monitor, you'll see that the channel you're using, it's not just that channel. So this is interesting. We always talk about 2.4 gigahertz. Or 5 gigahertz, those are the bands, the frequencies that Wi-Fi can use, as if that's a single, that's like right smack dab at 2.4 gigahertz. It's not. It's a wider swath represented by the name 2.4 gigahertz. And within that wider swath, we use some different frequencies in there. But because of the nature of radio and the transmission, each frequency is not discrete. We think, you know, digital folks are always thinking like, well, it's that or it's that. Well, not in analog world. In the analog world, it's kind of that and a little bit of that and some of that. And so if you look at the frequency used by your Wi-Fi transmitter, it's a bell curve. There's the most of it's used in the middle, most energy going to the middle, but there's a lot of energy on the sides there. And so you don't want too much overlap. So if you look, you can get a Wi-Fi monitor. There are lots of them out there, free. Great choices on every hardware platform, including the mobile devices. And if you look at a graph of Wi-Fi signals in use, you'll see why they choose one of those three bands. That's really the choice. And I would let it do it. The Airport Extreme especially does an excellent, my experience, does an excellent job. It's nice to have the dual band because if 2.4 gigahertz gets congested, which it often does, if you live anywhere near anybody else, then the 5 gigahertz is a good choice for two reasons. One, fewer people use it, but also it doesn't transmit through walls as well. It's, you know, the higher the frequency, the more it'll bounce off things. And so that's a good thing because it won't go across the street and nor will the neighbors, you know, interfere with it. So, and anyway, to answer your question, separate the two. That's okay. That's a good idea, I think. Not a huge amount, but, and you definitely don't want to overlap capabilities. Either the PACE should do it or your airport should do it, but don't both have both do Wi-Fi or both do network address translation. That's a recipe for disaster.
Okay, so I'll just keep the two modems separated a little bit.
Yeah, apart. You know what? That's superstitious on my part. They're pretty well insulated, but I feel like they should. Anything, especially if they're both transmitting. You're going to turn off the Wi-Fi on the PACE, so that's okay.
Yeah, and I have to put the Airport Extreme on bridge mode because I tried putting the PACE on bridge mode. It's almost impossible. So
okay.
I figured let it do all the
A lot of people do that. I do that. I have my airport in bridge mode because the cable company supplied modem insists.
Right.
It's my job. Okay. It's my job to do the DHCP.
So I'll keep them apart. I'll shut off the Wi-Fi.
Yes.
And I'll enjoy my new broadband.
Enjoy your... Well, I'm thrilled to talk to somebody who has the new service. It sounds like it's a good solution.
Yeah, I tried to get the others one where I could get both telephone and DSL.
The Fusion service, yeah.
The Fusion, and it's not offered where I am because I am just 75 feet further from the central office.
Isn't that frustrating?
I'm on a second tier and they can't do it. And fortunately, DSL Extreme is only 2 miles from my house, so I was able to go there in person.
Oh, you're good.
Talk to them about it.
That's great.
How great is that to have the ISP right down the street from
me? And were they nice?
Oh, they're extremely nice.
Yeah.
They're a wonderful company, and
Excellent.
Everything's great. And I'm getting, as I said, terrific speeds and no problems at all. So thank you for telling me about DSL Extreme, and thank you for answering the question about not putting the modems exactly touching each other.
Good.
Perfect.
My pleasure. Have a great day, Jeff. Thank you. 8888 Ask Leo. Our next caller comes to us from Whittier, California. Diana's on the line. Hi, Diana.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
So far today, I have a question for you.
Yes.
I have a Windows XP, and I'm going to bite the bullet finally. And I want to get a new computer. However, I want to know how to transfer the files to the new computer.
All right. We're going to take a break because we have to, but hang on. I will help you accomplish this mission in just a moment. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by my mattress company. Oh, I love my Casper. We were talking about mattresses earlier and different kinds of mattresses. Casper is a unique proposition that I think maybe takes some getting used to. You probably think you have to go to a mattress store and try a mattress before you buy it. I'm sure you think that. I thought that. But on my third mattress doing that, I thought there must be a better way of doing this. And Casper has offered a really good solution. Because the truth is, you can't tell in 5 minutes or 10 or even half an hour wide awake if that mattress is going to work for you. Casper lets you take that mattress, sleep on it for 100 days, and then still return it if you want. They'll even come and get it. You don't have. It's very easy. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses, a fraction of the cost, and because they don't have showrooms. Actually, they have a showroom in New York. There are a couple places where they have showrooms, but you can try it. It comes in a box. They're premium mattresses made in the U.S. They combine two technologies to give you a perfect, perfect sleep. It's memory foam and latex. So it is a foam mattress. There's no springs. That means it lasts longer, it's cooler sleeping, and it doesn't have any of those spring lumps that you get. Just the right sink and bounce. They've really spent some time testing this. In fact, if you go to the website, Casper, CASPER.com, and you look at the technology they used to design the mattress, you can see they really spent some time thinking about what was just the right way to do it. They ship it to you in a box that is considerably smaller than the mattress. It opens and the mattress goes, reep, and it's ready to sleep on just beautifully. Very comfortable. Very cool sleeping. It's my favorite new mattress. So I want you to go to casper.com/techguy. You're going to save $50. It's very affordable anyway. By eliminating the showrooms, they've got the price down to $500 for a twin, up to $950 for their king size or California king, much lower than buying any one of these, you know, industry leaders. And you'll save $50 because you're listening and you go to casper.com/techguy and use the promo code techguy. Take a look at Casper. You have a full 100 days to try it. Nothing like it. Casper.com/techguy. And as a cat, I liked it so much, I got it for my son. He moved off campus this fall and he needed a mattress. And I said, well, let me have one shipped to you. We have the box shipped to him. There's the box right there. And he has a great queen mattress and he loves it. He's a fan. Just ask around. In fact, in our chat room, we have a number of Casper, happy Casper customers. And I think you'll see it's a great idea. And again, they'll come and get it if you don't like it. No cost to you. Free shipping too. Casper.com/techguy and use the promo code techguy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Diana's on the line from Whittier. She's finally, you said, biting the bullet. That could be dangerous. And moving from XP, you got a Windows 8 machine or you're thinking about it?
Actually, I'm not very sure. I would prefer a Windows 7 if it's still possible to get one, but I'll go to the Windows 8.1.
Before you rush to Windows, is there a reason you're buying a Windows machine?
Not at all, just previous experience.
Right. Here's why I say that. I think a lot of times people don't need the complexity of Windows. Windows is nothing wrong with Windows. It's a very powerful operating system. It can do an awful lot, but with great power comes great complexity. And if you're using Windows, you kind of have to become a computer expert in security, in management. You have to be careful about what you download and install. There's a lot of issues that can come up. You hear them all the time. Just listen to the show. That's the people who call. 99% of the problems are Windows.
Right.
So oftentimes I'm telling people now that the industry has matured considerably. What 10 years ago, Windows. That made sense. But the industry's changed, and they've given you better options. So there are two things I would consider before you rush to Windows, and then I'll answer your question.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to derail you, but I'm on a mission because I think people just go, well, Windows, I got Windows, and I'm going to keep getting Windows because that's what you get. Everybody gets Windows, and I don't think that's necessarily the good answer. Many people are getting tablets these days and very happy with it. If mostly what you do is surf the net and email, which, by the way, is mostly what everybody does, then you don't need Windows to do that. What do you do with your computer? Is it most of the stuff you do in your browser?
Yes. Like you said, all I do is just basically surf the internet.
And email.
And email. Right. I do some video streaming every now and then. I'm retired, so I'm pretty much at the low spectrum of knowing anything in technology. So I just need a machine in front of me to be able to have that option.
Well, and there are two choices. There's for the very basic stuff, and this is what my mom uses, is an iPad is a great choice because that's all she does too. And you can stream video, not from all sites because Apple doesn't want to support Flash, so not from every site, but more and more because iPads and iPhones don't support Flash, websites are saying, well, we better do something else. But there's another choice you might consider if you want a keyboard and a little bit bigger screen and you want maybe a little more computer-style functionality is something called a Chromebook. This is what Google makes the operating system for these. It's a very sturdy, reliable, secure operating system. And essentially, all it is a browser. It's the Chrome browser. You can do all the streaming you want. It's got Flash built into it. You can allow a lot of capability if you want. But for email and surfing, it was made for that. Plus, you get a keyboard. It is a laptop. Sometimes people want a bigger screen or they don't want a laptop computer. It's a laptop. And they're cheap. They're under $500. So, in fact, some are $200, $250. A lot of students are using them now. A lot of schools use them now. I think there's some very good Chromebooks out there from Acer, A-C-E-R.
Okay.
Asus, A-S-U-S. Lenovo, L-E-N-O-V-O. And HP actually makes, I think, maybe the best one. Dell and HP make very good Chromebooks.
Yes, my preference is Dell.
Yeah, Dell has a Dell. Well, I think they discontinued it. They had the best Chromebook for a while. But I think they still have Chromebooks. So the nice thing about that is, first of all, there is no security issue with Chromebooks. They're absolutely secure. You do have to have a Google account. You'll be setting a Google account up if you don't already have one. You can use Google Gmail with it and all the Google services, including their word processor, their spreadsheet, their slides, their music. A lot of the things people do with computers, Google provides those services for free. And if you somehow screw it up, which is I've never been able to do, try as I might, they have this feature called Power Wash. And you push the button and it starts, it's like, oh, okay, all done. It's so much simpler. So an iPad is a good choice, or an Android tablet is a good choice, or Chromebook is a good choice. I wouldn't by default go to Windows. Now, to answer your question, going zzz, rewind all that. When you buy your new version of Windows, and you can still get Windows 7 until the end of this month.
Okay.
At the end of this month, they're really Microsoft saying, don't sell any more Windows 7s. But until the end of this month, you can still go to Dell and others, and you can get a Windows 7 machine. There is a transfer wizard that will take your data and transfer it over. I actually don't like to do that, but you can. My preference is make a backup of your data. If you want to just, when you buy your machine, buy a little external drive, that's a good idea. Put all your data from the... You're not going to throw out the XP machine right away anyway, right?
No, that's
yeah,
right.
So you still have it. So copy the stuff, the documents from the XP machine onto a hard drive, and then you can copy them from the hard drive onto the new computer. That way, you're now going to have three copies, which is great. Your old machine, this external hard drive, and your new computer. And then settings don't copy over. You'd have to go through your Wi-Fi settings and your network settings and stuff like that. But that's not, you know, you do that once and you're done.
So that's the easiest to...
It's not the easiest. It's the cleanest way to do it. I'm not crazy about the transfer wizard that Windows uses because it copies everything. And sometimes I think it's a little aggressive. It copies too much. Now, your apps, you're still going to need to reinstall anyway.
Right.
So, but what do you probably don't use a lot of applications. What do you use?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Like I said, I'm
nothing. So this is going to be easy.
Yeah, I'm easy peasy.
But that's why I would look at a tablet or maybe if you want a keyboard, a real keyboard, a Chromebook, because you don't need all the complexity. Why? It's like saying, I want a hammer and nail, but I'm going to buy an entire toolkit.
Right.
You don't really need it.
The reason I tend to shy away from the laptops is because of my vision. The
right.
Screens tend to be a bit smaller.
Well, and that there's an argument for Windows in that case because you can get a 27-inch screen. You can get a nice big screen.
Right.
There must be a solution in that direction. Apple is supposedly looking at a 13-inch iPad, and that would be a good case for... A good argument for it is so for my vision too. I can't, you know, some of this stuff. I did buy the new Acer 13-inch Chromebook, and it's a very high res screen. It's 1080p, and I can't see. I can't read anything on it. I have to like peer at it, and that's no fun. You don't want to have it to be work.
In terms of the desktop, what would you recommend?
Stick with Dell. You've had good experience with Dell. They're great. I have nothing against them. There are people who make Chromebook computers with a big screen. Here's a LG Electronics. They call it the Chrome Base. It's a 21-inch monitor with the Chrome OS on it, and it's $350. And I have to say that's pretty attractive. And for a lot of people, this is on Amazon for $350. For a lot of people, we'll put a link at techguylabs.com. For a lot of people, this is probably all you need.
Right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure. I'm so glad to talk to you, Diana.
I love listening to your show, so I put you on my schedule every Sunday.
Bless you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. We're talking about photography. He's a professional photographer. But he always is very helpful to me, helping me get the most out of my pictures. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo.
You
How's
just did a workshop on light.
Yeah, I sometimes do that. I teach people things, and light is so essential that I mean, photography, you know, it's in the name, right? We are writing with light. That's what photography means.
Right.
The word means.
And, right.
So I want to just talk a bit about light today. I think because, well, I'm just in the groove, so let me just continue on that.
Good.
And the thing is about good light for portraits, because every now and then we want to shoot pictures of someone else, and then you might wonder, why don't those portraits come out well? Why don't they look nice? But they're okay. Let me give you just a brief, like 1-2 minute primer on light. Light has four different properties. First, intensity, right? So it's pretty much how bright it is. And the camera will typically take care of that. The camera will do the exposure. So no matter if you're in dark light or in really bright light, the camera will kind of do the job for you more or less, but usually it's pretty good. And the pros will want to kind of influence that. But in general, with the automatic settings, you can be quite well off. The color is the second property of light. And that's like a color cast. You know, a candle has a different color cast than a fluorescent light, for example. And the camera kind of balances that out for you too. So the camera does what's called white balance. And those two things, again, intensity and color, the camera does quite well. But then there are two other properties where the camera can't really do anything about, which is kind of your responsibility as a photographer. And the one is the direction of the light. And, you know, during the daytime, it might come like straight from the top. In the evening, it comes in from the side. And that kind of influences how things look in the picture. And you'll have to, as a photographer, have to keep an eye on that. And then the fourth thing, and that is kind of really important, especially when it comes to things like portraiture, is the size of the light source. Now, we are looking at the sun, for example. The sun, even though, I mean, we know the sun is huge. The sun is really huge. But the sun is a point light source. It's actually a very small light source when we look at how big it is in the sky. The sun is a tiny, little, tiny light source. So what it does is it makes harsh light. And you can tell that if you actually the trick is you can, well, I'll tell you the trick in a second, because there's this other light condition where the size of the light source is bigger, and that's when we have clouds in the sky or when we don't have direct sunlight. And that is the kind of light that gives you good portraits, the light that is not too harsh. Now here's the very simple trick to recognize if the light is very harsh or if it's not. Just look down on the road, look at your shadow, and look at the edge of the shadow. And the harder that edge is, the harsher the light is. It's pretty simple. So softer light, less of an edge on your shadow, maybe not even a shadow, is typically pretty good light for portraits.
Sometimes, but you know, all the rules are made to be broken. I mean, it just depends.
Oh, true.
What you're trying
to achieve,
right?
There are, absolutely. But like if you're a beginner, that's something that you can go by, and then that will typically give you decent results in
right.
the beginning.
Right.
So the size, the direction, and by the way, the direction also has to do with the color cast. So if you look how the sun moves closer to the horizon, the light from the sun gets warmer. And that in itself is also very nice light. So the low light coming in from really right above the horizon, hitting some nice brick buildings, the brick house, for example, that must look beautiful in the sun, like in the evening sun.
It does, yeah, yeah.
And then go out and take some portraits in that light. That'll also be really, really nice.
Light is really what you're playing with when you're taking
it
pictures.
It is. Light is everything. And interesting, like sometimes, actually more often than not, the light coming at you, not the light being behind you, like the main light source coming at you from behind the subject, very often gives you really interesting light, especially in portraits. You should try that next time.
You don't have to have your back to the light.
Well, you don't have to have your back to light. No, but it used to be the case like 20, 30, 40 years ago when cameras weren't as good and film
right.
wasn't as good. But
right.
nowadays, the cameras are so sensitive that they can pick up even light in those shadowy areas where you don't have the direct light. And it ends up being fairly nice with like a nice light on the shoulders and on the hair. Gives you nice separation from the background. So that's also a very good light situation for portraits if you have a direct light source. But if you don't, if you have like soft shadows, that's typically very nice for portraiture.
I posted a picture on my Flickr stream. It's Leoville on Flickr that I took in London. Actually, this is Henry VIII's Hampton Court Castle. And it's about light because the sky was cloudy, but interesting. And then even on the castle, there's a shadow and bright sun.
It is beautiful.
It's fun to see the different interplay of light. Light is fun to play with, isn't it? You know, and that's a postcard. It's not a fascinating shot, but I just like how the light played in it, and that's what.
Oh, you could sell that picture as a postcard. Someone would probably give you money for that. It's that good, and that's the light doing that.
It's all the light. Yeah, I mean, this would be a fairly flat, dull picture without the interesting light. Yeah. It's fun to play with that. Now, we have an assignment to encourage you to play. This one is really play. And by the way, Lisa and I tried it, and we didn't have enough light, and so we were all blurry. So this is another one where you have to have enough light or the right shutter speed. So tell us what our assignment is this week.
It's the shelfie. So what you do is you put your camera on a shelf slightly above your head. You set it on a 10-second self-timer, and then it counts down, and you jump up right when it hits when it finishes the countdown and takes the picture. And do this with a few friends around. You'll have a lot of fun doing that. A shelfie.
Are we getting any yet?
Not yet. No,
I think people are shy. No shy shelfies. So
I'm gonna upload mine pretty soon.
Good. You know what? We'll do one this week so we can at least there'll be you and me. There'll be some examples up there. We have a couple more weeks left. It's not a contest. It's not a competition. It's just for fun to get you out there taking pictures, to trying things, experimenting. Once you take the picture, upload it to Flickr, FLICKR.com. That's the Yahoo photo sharing site. Really great place. It's free. You get a terabyte of storage. You get comments and share it with your friends. We have a group called the Tech Guy Group inside Flickr. Tag your shelfie with the word shelfie so we know that that's your submission and submit it to the Tech Guy Group. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will tell you. Thank you. Welcome. And then we'll review three of the most interesting shelfies in a couple of weeks. Chris Marquardt is at discoverlightroom.com, an excellent place to get his video workshop on Lightroom, which is both his and my favorite photo post-processing editor. Really love it. He also has many other informative things online at his website. In fact, if you go to discoverthetopfloor.com, you can even find out about his next workshops. Thank you, Chris.
Good place to go, yeah. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, I was playing with light. I realize because our light in England, we were so lucky. We were there last week, I guess, and it was an unseasonably dry and sunny October, and so we got very interesting sunlight and clouds. And so I realize now as I look at my pictures, most of them were playing with the unusual light that we were getting. From London. It was really, really fun.
Amazing light. Amazing light. Good stuff.
Good light. I remember going to Australia, to Tasmania on a photo expedition, and it was just overcast all the time, and it was so boring.
So That's very hard.
Having a fun sky and some interesting shadows really does make a trip more fun. Thank you, Chris. Take care.
Absolutely.
Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Discover Lightroom. .com. He'll be back next week and every week when he doesn't have a workshop to help us get the most of our digital photography. 8888 Ask Leo the number. More of your calls to come. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the well-lit tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Tom on the line, Warren, Ohio. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, I'm there, Leo. Can you hear me?
Okay? I hear you great. Welcome back.
Okay. Yeah, it's football and Tech Sunday again. So I just had to give
football? What about baseball? Don't we get a little baseball?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I watch a little bit of that, but on Sunday, mostly football.
All right.
But anyway, my question is, I found out that if you got the M7 coprocessor, that you can track your steps in the Health app.
Yes, this is a new iPhone.
Mark Gurman gave me that information. Nice article by Mark Gurman. I know you're familiar with
him. He's the best. 22? Kid. And he's one of the best writers about Apple in the business at 9to5Mac.com. Mm-hmm.
So I was looking at my app, and I tracked it here, and if I go to it, it says I'm averaging 4,479 steps per day.
Right.
And I wasn't aware that it was doing that. And I like that feature.
The Samsung phones do that too, because, you know, all of these phones have accelerometers built into them. It's a fairly cheap thing to do. And so it can feel a step. So making a smartphone a pedometer is fairly trivial. Almost all of the modern smartphones can do it. They don't all do it, but Samsung has an app that does that. Apple does now. I think the HTC One does as well.
Well,
they're both as good as and as bad as, say, a Fitbit. I mean, there are limitations to these things.
Right. Is there anything you think anything now is good for us health tracking, like the Fuel Band or the Jawbone Up? Jawbone Up says it even tracks caffeine intake.
Yeah, if you enter it.
Yeah.
It doesn't. So,
you have to calculate.
You know, the truth is, let me tell you the dirty little secret of fitness bands. They're just pedometers.
Right.
You could buy a $5 pedometer. It would do exactly the same thing. The only difference is they record it into an app on a smartphone. They give you feedback. Some of them actually have displays on the fitness band.
Right.
I'm not against fitness bands. I think that they're very good at encouraging people to take that extra step. I know when I used to wear the Nike Fuel Band, which was one of my favorites, when I was close to my goal but not there, I would walk a little extra. I'd go around the block just to get the goal every day. And that's a good, healthy adjustment. But don't get fooled by the advertising copy. These are pedometers. They're not health measure. They can't measure. Some of them can measure your heart rate. My Moto 360 can fairly well measure my heart rate, not perfectly. A lot of them can't measure your heart rate if you're moving or if there's noise. So you have to sit dead silent and not move for a minute so it can get your heart rate. That's kind of useless.
Hard for me to do.
What's the point of that? I want to know what my heart rate is when I'm on the treadmill. They don't. Most of them don't work for them that way. Nothing can measure your blood pressure yet. Nothing can measure your blood sugar. That's something a lot of people, especially diabetics, would love to know yet. This is the very early days. So Apple with its health kit, and by the way, it's broken, but they say it's going to be fixed. It doesn't work perfectly right now. But Apple with its health kit, the idea really mostly is this will be a repository, a place to store things, that information you'll get from external devices that you'll have to buy. For instance, Y-Things makes a Bluetooth blood pressure, a sphygmomanometer is what it's called. It's the cuff that inflates.
Sphygmomanometer.
Yeah, it inflates on your arm and goes, you know, you've used it at the doctor's office. Well, they make one that's Bluetooth enabled, so you use it and then it records it in your iPhone. And it'll even, and this is great, keep a database and a graph and you can send it to your doctor and all of that's useful, but you have to buy additional hardware. We are a long way off from the dream of the tricorder, a device that looks at you and says, oh, you're sick. You get to the doctor. That's the dream. That's the promise. We ain't there yet. And no amount of ad copy is going to change that. That's just hype. And frankly, even the fitness bands. One other thing that they do, some of them have, and your phone does, barometers in them so they can measure altitude as well as steps. So a couple of them can say, well, you climbed 50, you know, stairs or something. Yeah, okay, nice. Some of them will measure your sleep patterns. But, phones will do that too. There's a program for Android phones called Sleep as Android that you put on the bed. You have to have it, like, next to you on the bed, and it will record movement. It will record snoring. It will record you talking in your sleep. That's kind of cool. But you have to have your phone in bed with you the whole time. And then in the morning, it gives you, I don't know how much use this is, but it'll give you a graph. I guess if you really care, if you're a total narcissist and so self-involved that you are fascinated by every excretion that your body makes, then you might be very interested. Well, I had coffee at 4 p.m., and then I tossed and turned 32% more. I guess the coffee kept me awake. Okay, you might have known that anyway. I think this is all more promise and hype than it is delivery at this point. But good. I mean, we want this. It's a great idea. Someday. It's like the speech recognition in these phones. More often than not, it gets it wrong. There's some hysterical, comedic stuff that my phone has said to me that has nothing to do with anything I asked. Sometimes it wakes up, sometimes it doesn't. This is technology. And those of us who love technology kind of, we're excited about the promise of it. what the future might hold. And we get a little glimmer and a glimpse of it by talking to our phones or sleeping with them or wearing them on our wrist. But it isn't for a normal person. I think I wouldn't blame you if you looked at us and went, rolled your eyes a little, scratched your head. We've got a ways to go. Evangelina, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Evangelina. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
My son's interested in getting a computer, either a desktop or a laptop.
And he's off to college?
Well, no, he's here at home.
Oh, okay. But he's going to be a college student.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is he going to study?
Well, right now he's studying, he's majoring in medicine.
Oh.
Minoring in music.
Oh.
The other way around.
Yeah, no, that's good. But he will have strong opinions if he's doing music on his computer. He'll have strong opinions, and I suspect it will include the word Macintosh.
Okay.
But he downloads
a lot of files, a lot of music files, and he wants to know what you recommend as far as...
What kind of music is he making? He's not just listening. You mean he's making music?
No, right now he's listening.
He's majoring in listening to music. He will not be the first college student nor the last to major in that, I might add. It was a big part of my college career, too. Hey, hang on. We got to take a break for news at the top of the hour. Let's talk a little more. Help you buy a perfect computer for your boy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, speaking of making things simpler, our sponsor, ZipRecruiter.com, simplifies the hiring process. Every business has to go through this. You know, it's great now hiring people because there's job boards out there, but which job board do you use? They're all, you know, some are better for some types, some for other types. You solve that problem, as we did, with a company called ZipRecruiter. Go to ZipRecruiter.com right now, and you'll see how you could post to 50-plus job boards with one click of the mouse. Post your job in a variety of places, including Craigslist and LinkedIn and Twitter. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. You post once, and you watch those qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. That's important, too, because you're going to get so many candidates that you want an easy way to rank them, to judge them, and to pick the right employee, and ZipRecruiter makes that easy, too. No more emails or calls to your office. You'll be able to screen candidates quickly, rate them, and hire the right person fast. That's why more than 250,000 businesses use ZipRecruiter for their hiring. We did, and it was great. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter free for 4 days. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. You get a look at all the features, like the ability to create a careers page that looks just like your website and more. ZipRecruiter.com/techguy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, hour three of the Tech Guy program. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones. That pretty much rounds it up. Anything in that area, 888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Our website, techguylabs.com. That's where you can find all the links, everything I talk about, so you don't have to write it all down. Don't worry. Just write this down, techguylabs.com. We were talking before the break to Evangelina. Her college-age son is looking for a new computer. I presume a laptop, right, Evangelina?
Probably.
Yeah, because he's going to take it to school and stuff. And listening to music, it doesn't matter. There's no preference. All digital devices these days are fine for listening to music.
Okay.
So that doesn't matter at all. Unless all of his music is on iTunes. Windows and iTunes are not a great match. But, you still can listen to it. So, but he is majoring in medicine, which means there may be some software, bio software, stuff like that, chem software that he might need. You should find out if there's some specifics. Is this a surprise, or can you work with him?
Oh, I can work with him. It's just I really wanted him to call you, but he's not here right now.
Okay.
To let you really know what he wanted.
Right.
And then I also wanted you know, something. We were thinking of a desktop because, you know, sometimes I pay bills from there. I want to.
Oh, you want to? You want to share it?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, it should be a desktop. The other argument against a laptop is they get stolen and lost very easily.
Right.
Desktop much less likely to be stolen or lost. Yeah. And do you have an opinion on Windows versus Mac? Do you care?
No, I don't.
I prefer Macs. Here's the thing that probably anybody buying a computer these days should understand. You see some very low prices, like $300 for a desktop computer. Don't buy a $300 desktop computer. They make too many compromises to make an inexpensive computer like that. Essentially, computer companies have two lines. They have a consumer line. That's the cheap line, the line for the price-sensitive audience. And look, I understand times are tough, and not everybody can spend $1,000 on a computer. So they do offer these very inexpensive computers. But in general, I would recommend the professional or business class computers. They're made better. They'll be more robust, more reliable. If it's just a throwaway, okay. But if it's something you'd like to last 5 years and,
Right.
So the thing about Apples do cost more. Macs cost a lot more. But they don't make a consumer line. They only make a pro line. They don't have cheap computers. They only have quality computers. So an iMac is an excellent choice. We're talking about $1,200 now, $1,300. But they're great desktop computers, beautiful screens. They're elegant looking. They aren't a lot of wires. They'll do anything you want to do. And one of the big advantages on the Macintosh is you don't have to worry about viruses and malware. Security is pretty good on Macintoshes.
Okay, that's what I was concerned about, viruses.
Yeah, boy, you hear it. I mean, it's almost impossible to use Windows, it seems like, and not get bit, if not by malware, by friendly adware. It's just all over the place. And I know what to do, so I don't get bit by it. But, boy, everybody else, we have an 11-year-old. And I had to basically lock down his computer. I had to say, look, you're going to be a limited user. You're not going to be an administrative user because you keep installing malware on the system. And it's all because he wants to download games and he goes to these sites and he doesn't know any better.
Right.
But it's really, it's dangerous out there for Windows users. What are your friends? Somebody's asking a good question in our chat room, the Sue the Writer. What are your friends and family use? Where are you going to get your support from? Is there anybody who's a computer literate type in your circle?
No, not really.
Yeah. So that often conditions what you get, because if you had somebody, if Uncle Joe was great with computers and Uncle Joe's a Windows guy, then I'd say get Windows. It sounds like you're on your own.
Yes, we are.
Oh, boy. And your son does. If your son has a preference, that would be also would lead you in a direction. If he says, no, Ma, I got to get Windows because I got to use Fruity Loops, which is a music creation program, then I'd say get Windows. It's not that big a difference.
What do you recommend in the Windows?
I like Dell. I like Dell. I like Lenovo. HP, it makes decent stuff, but they put a lot of junk on it, which I don't like. I generally don't recommend HP. We'll see. They're splitting up now into two divisions. They're going to split off the business stuff and they're going to have just a computers and printers division. That could either mean they get a lot better, could mean they get a lot worse, could mean no change at all. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see who's running it. Have you had a computer before?
Yes, we have.
And it's a Windows machine, I would guess, right?
Yes. Yeah. We've had a Dell before.
Dell's good.
Yeah.
Dell's good. If you need support, Dell, nobody offers good free support anymore, but Dell does have a very good, I think, gold support plan. You pay for it, but only if you need it. And I would say, if your son's fairly, savvy, you'd probably be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's studying medicine ought to be smart enough to keep a computer running healthily,
right?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And if you do go with Dell, make sure you, thank you to Sue the Writer. She's good. She says, don't forget to ask for the disks, the recovery disks. You might have to pay $10 extra for them. It is so nice to have a Windows install disk if you're going to use Windows.
Okay.
Because one of the things that does happen with Windows is you have to reinstall it because you get bit by stuff and the only solution is to reinstall it. I would get a Mac if you can afford it. But if you can't, then there are some good Windows machines out there.
And what browser do you recommend the best?
I use Chrome. I would not use Internet Explorer. Windows comes with Internet Explorer. I don't recommend it. Chrome is excellent. That's my choice. On the Mac, Safari is pretty good, too. On Windows, Chrome.
Mozilla.
Mozilla's fine. Firefox. That's fine.
Okay.
You know, Firefox quality varies wildly because they're, I don't know why, but for a long time they used just a ridiculous amount of memory. It would just like bog your system down. They seem to have fixed that. But it just, the quality varies wildly in the in versions of Firefox. Chrome seems pretty consistent.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate your help here.
Hey, my pleasure. I think this is a exciting time.
Yes, it is.
I love it. Thank you, Evangelina. I appreciate
the
call.
Thank you, Leo.
All right. My pleasure. There are good choices. There are lots of good choices. I like Acer's, Asus computers. Acer's okay. A-C-E-R. They make high-end and very low-end computers. I don't recommend their low-end, inexpensive stuff. But I use an Acer S7 laptop, Windows laptop I love. That's my favorite Windows laptop. Best Windows laptop I've ever had. Just awesome. Asus makes some very good stuff, A-S-U-S. Support from Acer and Asus, pretty much non-existent. That's why I like, I almost always tell people Dell, just because there's somebody in Texas you can call. Yeah, a lot of the, you know, Lenovo, Asus, and Acer are all Chinese companies. And I just find that, you know, it's hard to get somebody knowledgeable for support. They usually outsource their support in the U.S. to a third party. I prefer Dell in that regard. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number to call if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. If you want to say, you're wrong, Leo, that's okay. You can also go to do that on the website, techguylabs.com. We put all the questions up there, all the answers. We do it actually fairly quickly. James DeRuvo's listening as I speak. Hi, James. And writing everything down, kind of a rough cut. And then we come back, we go through it, we polish it up, we add audio, we add video. You can actually jump to any individual question and listen to it, watch it. And then the comments are invaluable too. So if you think I'm wrong, another good place to go, if you don't want to call in, techguylabs.com, and just put it in the comments. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte with our 20th Century Fox, Heather Hammond. The phone ranger taking your calls at 8888. Ask Leo. You ready to go to Malibu? Let's all go to Malibu. Danielle's looking at the Pacific Ocean.
I sure am.
Enjoying the beautiful day. I'm so jealous.
Oh, well, you're welcome to come and visit.
Don't be careful. I might actually do it.
Well, then you can fix my computer.
Oh, you know, I feel like I could have it. Once this radio thing inevitably falls apart, I'm going to have a nice career of dress driving down the coast, helping people with their computers, just one by
that's
one.
Wonderful.
Why don't we have something like that? We need that.
Why don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just kind of computer handholding service.
That would be great.
Yeah. Well, maybe I could do it by phone. What's going on?
Okay. Well, we have a Mac OS X, and we upgraded to Maverick, and I can no longer open my Apple Works document.
Apple Works? Oh, no.
I know.
Oh, no. Okay, so here's what happened. Unfortunately, Apple Works is pretty old. You might have noticed.
I know, but you know what? It's simple.
Yeah, no, it's great. Now, you know,
I'm not a good typist. It's what I want. And
its successor, ClarisWorks, was like that too. I really liked it, and I was very sad when Apple kind of let it go.
Yeah.
But it was designed not even for an Intel processor. You were using something designed for a different processor family, PowerPC.
Right, I understand that.
And Apple finally, eventually said, "Yeah, we're not gonna build in the capability to run this old software anymore." So, the truth is, you must have made a big jump because they did that before Mavericks. You must have gone from Tiger, right?
Yeah, my husband upgraded and all this stuff, and
he made a big jump.
He was upgrading because otherwise I would just say, "Hey, wait a minute."
He went from cats to beaches. That's a big jump.
Then, yeah.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, what improvement in every respect but one, it won't run the old software anymore.
Right. So what do I do? We have another, we have an older computer, and I have all my documents on there, but they're not updated. You know,
so, yeah. So what I would do, before you get rid of the old computer, you could still use the Apple Works on the old computer, right?
Right.
Yeah. Before you get rid of the old computer, I would get all... Does the old computer have a USB port?
Yes.
There's your husband.
The
your husband
all
is...
All my fault.
Your husband's a little chagrined. No, it's not. You know, it's time to move on. Apple Works is 20 years old.
Well, she has ClarisWorks, AppleWorks.
I love ClarisWorks. I loved it.
She's got stuff from the old Performa Mac.
Right, exactly.
We've had Macs for over 20 years.
Yeah. So Apple does have a replacement. They call it Pages. Actually, the whole thing is called iWork.
Yeah, we tried that. Yeah.
You don't like it?
I don't like it.
It doesn't work.
I don't like Pages.
It doesn't convert the documents.
And that's what I was going to say, is use the old computer, open up the documents, and don't save them out as AppleWorks or ClarisWorks documents. Save them out in the form called RTF, rich text format. Pages will handle that.
Pages will handle.
Yeah, you got to find a format that the old and the new can meet together and talk in.
There's no kind of program anywhere that can just convert these documents, say, to Microsoft Word or something like that.
Well, Word's worse. You want to use Word? Come on.
I don't want to use Word.
Danielle doesn't want to use Word.
This problem.
What's your husband's name, Danielle?
Mike.
Mike. Danielle doesn't want to use Word.
Yeah, I know.
Danielle doesn't want to use Microsoft.
I don't blame you, Danielle. Why should you? You've been using a Mac for so long. You got the cow dog, Claris the cow dog. Woof. You don't want to go into that Microsoft world. So let me think. There are a couple of things you might try. First of all, we can get the documents over, but you'll have to save them back out in a new format from AppleWorks.
Right.
You need to find a compatible format. Most word processors can read and write RTF, rich text format. Once you've got them in rich text format, keep them that way, because unless you have a lot of specialized formatting, you'll be able to get... You didn't put, like, tables in there and weird stuff, did you?
I just have databases, but it's mostly text. I don't have any dates or anything like that. Yeah. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, I don't think you'll have too much trouble converting it. Let me look. Here's an article, Converting System 9 AppleWorks 6 Files to OS 10 Pages Formats. Holy cow. I'm pretty sure AppleWorks must...
No, they don't.
They don't.
Well,
I was on the phone with them for 2.5 hours one weekend trying to...
It does say here that AppleWorks will export to rich text or even Word files. So... I don't know about ClarisWorks. If you have CWK, ClarisWorks files, those you can open in Pages. Pages does understand those.
They understand some of them.
But you're losing some data.
Well, let's...
Try open them. Here's what I would recommend. You had them in AppleWorks or ClarisWorks. Save them out. Both those programs will save as RTF. That we know anything will read. You can go to any word processor. And now it's a process of trying word processor. I'd be honest with you, there's nothing as good as ClarisWorks. I love ClarisWorks.
I love ClarisWorks.
You know, I am with you. I understand that. The problem was it was kind of an all-in-one thing. It was I think Apple thought it was too simple. I don't know.
I
don't know. They just, for some reason, they decided to kill it. There are third-party word processors. There's some very nice word processors for the Mac you might want to check out. Most of them are in the App Store. There's very simple. See, it depends what you were doing with it. I mean, the thing about ClarisWorks is you could mix formats. You could have a spreadsheet embedded in a word processing document with a drawing.
I'm not that complicated.
No, we don't have it.
They were just text, pretty much text files.
Right.
It's text in a database.
So I'm going to give you some names of word processors you could take a look at that are simpler. There's one called ByWord that is as simple as you can get. And you might like it. It's on the App Store. ByWord.
Mm-hmm.
I used for years a program that has been kept up to date. It actually goes back to the Performa days, called Nisus, NISUS. And it's a beautiful Nicest Writer, and their less expensive Nicest Writer Express are beautiful, simple word processors from the early days of Macintosh. That would be a good choice.
And now you can you convert the Claris to that?
I'm going to tell you one more time, Mike. Save it out to RTF.
How do you
Nothing is going to read the CWK file. You open it in ClarisWorks, and you'll see an export, file export command, and you just export it instead of as a ClarisWorks file as an RTF file. Because, and you're, well, are there thousands of these?
There's quite a few.
Oh.
The solutions Apple gave me. I converted about 3 or 4 documents, and I said, that's enough.
I get it.
I've been on this since the Proforma time.
I get it. Well, maybe hire a college kid.
Right.
Somebody.
Maybe just.
So hang on. We're going to take a break. Maybe I can find a solution. Stand by. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you go to the App Store, as I was showing our caller during the break, there's so many good choices for word processors. And we did find, and I want to thank the chat room for this, we did find a utility that will automatically convert, which is so nice, from the AppleWorks format. I didn't think anybody still made anything like that. From the AppleWorks and ClarisWorks format into a modern format like Microsoft Word or RTF. It's from a company called Panergy, PANERGY-software.com. And it will just, and this is going to simplify the process if you have thousands of them. You just basically run them through the converter and it'll turn it into a Word file or an RTF file that anything else can read. At that point, then you got to choose which word processor you're going to use. By the way, I would choose an RTF format because everything in the world reads RTF. I mentioned a few. There's a lot more. If you go to the App Store, now that you have Mavericks, you can go to the App Store and just search for word processor. You'll see dozens. And just read the descriptions. Find one that kind of looks like what you're looking for. I wish the App Store allowed demos, you know, free trials. Unfortunately, they don't. But most of the apps are so inexpensive. It's, you know, pick a handful of them. They're as little as $8, $5. And maybe one will suit. There's nothing like ClarisWorks. There's an opportunity for somebody. Danielle, that was Danielle. You still there, Danielle?
Yeah,
I didn't lose you.
Here.
Does that help?
Yes.
Panergy.
PANERGY. And the program is called DocX Converter. We'll put a link at techguylabs.com. And I love WriteRoom. That's written by a friend of mine at Hogbay Software, but it's. The idea of that is for writers, it's no, you know, very little interface. It just kind of depends what you're looking for.
Yeah.
All right. I understand you don't want the complexity of Microsoft Office or even of Pages. You don't need all those features.
I don't. And I wish Apple would, you know, make a simple version.
Yeah. Well,
I'm sure
go.
I'm not the only one.
I know you're not the only one. I know you're not the only one. There's quite a few.
Yeah.
But try Byword. I really like Byword. There's quite a few inexpensive choices. You know, now that you have Yosemite, don't forget, under the Apple menu, there's an app store. Go there and search for what you want. And really, that's probably the best place to get stuff like that now. I use Google Docs. Those are free, but it's online. I think Google Docs is kind of the closest thing to ClarisWorks out there. Word processor, spreadsheet, slide program. That's pretty good. Good luck, Danielle and Mike. Mike was a little bit in the doghouse, I think. What'd you do to my computer? Benny in Pasadena, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Benny.
Hey, Leo. My friend lent me her BlackBerry Z10, and she asked for it back, so now I need to get my own.
Do you liked it?
Yeah, I did, and I'm looking for like a reputable place where I can get a certified used, some type, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was thinking of the popular ones, but I wanted to see what
Certainly you can get them on eBay. I see $174 on eBay. You know where I like? Newegg, and they have open box Z10s. That means they sold them and somebody didn't want it, returned it, which means it's as good as new, and those are $200. So, who's your carrier?
It would be Simple Mobile.
Okay. So they're GSM, I think. So you just put a SIM card in. So
yeah.
You have to make sure that you don't get the Verizon version. of the Z10 that you get the AT&T or T-Mobile version. In fact, best to get unlocked GSM version of it. That's what you're looking for. Unlocked GSM.
GSM, okay. Yeah.
It's simple, a GSM carrier. So do you know if you have a SIM card?
I do have a SIM card. Yeah, that's why I want to get me another phone.
That makes it nice, right? You just pop it out, and now you give it back to your girlfriend, and now you have a SIM card and no phone. But it makes it easy, but you have to buy an unlocked phone that supports the GSM network, because that's what that SIM card is.
Okay, and as far as space, how many gigabytes are we talking
about? I don't know what the variety was on the Z10. I'm not a huge BlackBerry fan. You're trying to... You know, let's see what they have on here.
Okay, let me ask you this: like 16 or 32? Is I think.
Well, the ones I'm looking at are 16. I don't know if they sold a 32.
Okay, so but 16 is enough.
Well, it depends. Yeah, I think it is. I mean, you're not going to, unlike an iPhone or an Android phone, you're not going to download hundreds of apps and load it up with music and videos. You're probably mostly using it as a phone and maybe a messenger.
Yes.
Yeah. So 16 is plenty.
Okay, 16 is plenty. Awesome.
Yeah.
Can I ask you one more question,
sure.
Leo? About the Chromebook, can you, like, create a document, like, on there? Like, for example, would you have to go, to Google Docs to create a document?
Yeah, so the idea of the Chromebook is, you know, most of them don't have much storage. They have, like, 16 gigs because... The real idea behind the Chromebook is exactly that, that you use Google Docs and your data is not on the Chromebook at all but in the cloud. And the reason for that is you can use it anywhere on any computer. You lose the Chromebook, you get a new one, you log onto your account, and it's exactly as if you never lost your computer. It's all still there. So it's stored in the Google Cloud, yes. So the one thing that people don't like about Chromebooks is you need online access to use them effectively. And you need to be living in the Google universe, the Google sphere.
Right.
I wouldn't get a Chromebook if you don't like Google.
No, I do like Google.
Yeah, I like Google. I got nothing against
them. Do they come in like keyboard or?
Yeah, it's a laptop. It's just like a laptop.
Oh, it's just like
a laptop. It is a laptop. It's a laptop, but instead of getting Windows or Macintosh or Linux operating systems. Well, actually, you are getting Linux, but a very simple Linux that only has a Chrome browser. Now, what they've done is they've made sure that there are many, many extensions you can add to your Chrome browser. In fact, we're approaching the point in the next month or so that you'll be able to run Android apps on these. And then that means anything you could run on an Android phone plus all the Chrome extensions will run on this. That makes it a pretty full-fledged computer. They just don't typically have a lot of storage because the whole point of this is to store your stuff on Google Drive. And by the way, almost all Chromebooks come with 100 gigabytes of Google Drive storage. Is that right, 100 gigabytes? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So you have plenty of storage on the cloud. You know, some people may say, well, I don't want Google to have my word processing. I don't care. I don't think they care either. But if you didn't want that, it wouldn't be a good choice.
Yeah.
You're
yeah,
living in the cloud. The whole, and this is what's exciting about the cloud to me. You don't have to worry about backup. You don't have to worry about losing your computer. You can use any computer. You just log onto your Google account on any computer. All your stuff is there. You continue working on as if nothing had happened. People often use Chromebooks, and then they go to work, and they use the full computer at work, but they log into their Chrome account, and all the stuff's there. I do that all the time.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. And as far as buying one, Leo, what are we looking at, like, typical?
They start at $200, ranged a little higher, maybe $400. They're not expensive.
Uh-huh. But where can I buy one at?
Anywhere. Best Buy, online, at the Google Store, play.google.com. Target, everywhere. Everywhere you can buy a computer will have Chromebooks.
Uh-huh. And that Newegg website you told me about earlier, would that be newegg.com?
Yep. Amazon also has Chromebooks. They sell a lot of Chromebooks at Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah, Dell sells them. Dell has some very nice Chromebooks. There are lots of choices out there. I was not a fan of the Chromebook when it came out. I said, who would want this? Now I kind of get it. It's simple. It's safe. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Let's go to Palm Beach, Florida. You know, the people who listen to this show live in beautiful places, don't they? Paul, Pat is on the line. Hi, Pat.
Well, hello, Leo.
I love Palm Beach.
I do, too, now.
Yeah. How long you been there?
Probably a little more than a year.
Yeah.
I'm from Atlanta, Georgia.
All right. All right. Well, you're used to the heat anyway.
Yes.
What can I do for you?
Well, I have an Android device, and I've had several over the years. I'm using the S5 right now.
Nice
but
phone.
I've noticed, I've noticed that when I'm listening to Google Play, you know, streaming, or when it's locally stored, I get these pauses in the music randomly. Do you have this problem?
Yeah, so if you're streaming, that might be bandwidth, but if it's local and you got the thing stored and it's still pausing, that's not good. And it probably means there's other stuff going on in the background that's using the processor. Android is fairly susceptible to this. I've noticed that when I'm downloading something, for instance, that it makes other things freeze. It's not unusual, even on a top-of-the-line Android phone with super-fast processors and plenty of RAM, like yours, by the way. You have a high-end Android phone that even then...
Here's the second part of it.
Yeah.
I have a tablet which doesn't have a cell radio in it whatsoever. It will not do it.
Yeah. Well, you know who.
And I'm not sure if it's just the radio's encryption, you know, 4G.
Yeah.
Taking processor time, or what the real reason could be.
First thing I would do is turn the phone off and on. I presume you've done this, but just in case you haven't.
Yeah, I've done a factory reset.
Oh.
Done that as well.
Oh, you've gone all the way.
Prayer. Yeah.
That's the next thing is a factory reset, which is a pain because you have to download all your apps again and all that.
Yeah, not a big problem. I've got everything in the cloud. So
yeah, that's one nice thing about Google is that it will remember everything and reinstall it. You're not keeping music on the SD card.
No, actually, I've done both. I've actually factory resetted it. It was stored without an SD in it whatsoever, so it was on the device.
That's not it. I don't know how widespread this is. Chat room, anybody with an S5 in there? A number of people are saying, yeah, Google Play is...
This has happened on my S4.
Oh.
And even on my S3, it did it as well.
Oh.
I'm thinking it's related to the radio in the phone.
When you play back music with the Samsung Music app, you don't get that problem, right?
Well, once or twice I did hear what's called event sounds generated by the OS.
Yeah.
I've heard it do there, too.
Yeah.
But not like, you know, of course, you're not listening to system sounds all the time. You're listening to music.
Music, though, you really don't want that to happen. And I've had that happen with Bluetooth, for instance, in my car. Some of my phones will hesitate a lot, so much so that they're unlistenable, and others won't. I'm not sure. It's not supposed to happen.
Part of it.
A number of people.
I usually am always, you know, on Bluetooth. So.
Number of people in the chat room say they've had that problem with Google Play Music. Then there's a guy in the chat room says, "I have an S5. It's never happened to me." This is one of those. You might. I mean, this would be an excuse to take it back where you got it and say it's. You know, here's what it's doing. I want a new one, and see if a new one fixes it. Sometimes these things. You know, you got to understand these things are. Computers, and they're mass produced. I mean, they're produced in the millions. Nobody checks them. It's not like, remember in the old days, it used to be when you'd buy a computer, they'd burn it in before they delivered it to you. They'd turn on the computer, they'd run software, they'd actually put it in a closet with a lot of other computers, a hot closet, and they'd run it all night. They'd do all these things to see if it was reliable. Well, nobody's doing that with these phones. They come off the assembly line, they're put in a box, and they're shipped to you. So it could just be that there's something wrong with this particular one. I would say this is an excuse to bring it in and get a new one.
Well, I would think that too, but my S3, my S4, and now my S5 all do the same thing.
Well, yeah, except that I listen to Google Play Music on my Android phones, and I've never had that happen. I have on Bluetooth, but I have never had that happen just listening on the phone. So... I don't think it's universal. That's why it's also hard to diagnose. Because if I could say, "Oh yeah, that's normal," Well, then at least you'd know what's going on. I don't think it's normal. I don't think that's how an Android phone is supposed to operate. Wait a minute. Bruce in the chat room says, I have the same problem with my Galaxy S5. I figured out what the problem is. What is it, Bruce? He says, I don't know if I like Bruce's solution. He says, you got to get notifications. No, that makes no sense. Swipe down. Press clear pending messages. I don't think that sounds right. It is clear that the Android device is doing something, that it's busying the processor so much to the point that it can't play continuously the music. And that, you know, that shouldn't happen. You've got a fast quad-core processor on there with a lot of gigahertz, plenty of RAM. I think there's 3 gigs RAM on that S5, so that's not it. But you really want to maybe look at some of the apps you've got. I wish they gave you a process monitor. Is anybody making an Android process monitor so you could see? See, on a desktop, you'd run a process monitor, and you could look at it, and you could say, oh, I see what's going on. It's indexing the hard drive or something. That's what's eating up all the CPU cycles. Number of people said I switched. One guy anyway said I switched to Spotify from Google Music, and I haven't had any issues since then. Bruce says, clear any pending voicemail messages. Really? I think the answer is there's something that is occupying the processor's attention so much so that it can't play music back smoothly. You want to figure out what that is and get rid of it. Paul in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Leo. I use Carbonite, your product.
Good man.
So it might have been a little over a week ago. You were talking about cameras, the SD cards, and I think you said you use a 32 gigabyte in there.
Yeah, I don't like to use too big in case they fail. I don't want to depend on it too much.
Right. So then I thought, you know what? In my smartphone, I have an S4. I have a 16 gigabyte micro card, and I decided to back it up. And because that's one thing about the Apple, at least you have iTunes, and it does the synchronization. But I really, you know, what do you use in the Android arena? So I started manually copying it. You know, you plug it in to the computer, and then it pops up, and I started manually copying them over. And then all of a sudden, things were airing out on me. And now I can't even see the card, and I have those in there.
You crashed the card.
Yeah, so I was wondering if you know of any utility, number one, and second of all, what would you recommend in terms of a program to regularly back this up?
Yeah, well, we're out of time. Helium to back it up, love it. And PCinspector.de to recover the card. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.